All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. It's Anti-War Radio. Next is Sheldon Richmond, Senior Fellow at the Future Freedom Foundation. He's also the editor of The Freeman, the Journal of the Foundation for Economic Education. He's the author of the book Tethered Citizens, Time to Repeal the Welfare State. He keeps the blog Free Association at SheldonRichmond.com. Sheldon, welcome back to the show.
Well, thanks for having me again. I always love being with you.
Well, I love having you here. Also, I like reading the things that you write. Obama's Imperial Adventure over at the Future of Freedom Foundation, as much as, digital representations of inked letters can drip with fury, this thing is dripping with it. Go ahead and tell us what's got you so upset about this war going on now. The latest one.
I think the Nobel Peace Prize Committee needs to be doing some reconsideration.
That's
how I would sum it up.
For starters.
I mean, this is just outrageous. And, what makes it even more outrageous are the contortions that the Obama defenders are going through to make this seem like a reasonable thing to do and not anything like George W. Bush would do. I mean, I was watching MSNBC last night. And it's unbelievable the way they are defending Obama.
Yeah.
And they have been for the last week, of course, on this.
Well, I hadn't seen Rachel Maddow on it, but I saw that guy, Cenk Uygur, and his whole thing was that the Republicans are hypocrites for supporting the last wars, but not this one. And his point was not that he's a hypocrite for not supporting the Republicans' wars and supporting this one. What the hell?
Well, I know, and I realize we probably shouldn't spend a lot of time on this because we're not talking about Obama's policy so much. But when people do that, what you just said, they're just taking the easy way out and being easy on themselves because you're not contending with the tough questions being asked about this intervention in the Libyan civil war. When all you do is talk about Republican hypocrisy, that doesn't respond to the objections. What about Ron Paul? Ron Paul wasn't a hypocrite. He's taken the same line right along. So why don't they address the real objections to this intervention instead of talking about Newt Gingrich flip-flopping? They spent a half an hour on that. But how's that relevant to anything? Who cares about Newt Gingrich? He's not going to be dog catcher anywhere.
I know. I wish somebody would tell him that. Actually, I'm kind of glad they don't, because it's fun watching him flop around out there trying so hard to get people to like him.
Yeah, and Rachel Maddow Rachel Maddow was praising Obama precisely because he did not hold an Oval Office address and explain to the American people about this mission. This was to show how reluctant. She thought the greatest thing about this is how reluctant Obama is. And as she put it, the White House keeps telling us how reluctant he was to do this. And she thought it was a virtue that he didn't go on TV and explain it, because that's what all the predecessors have done, and we know what kind of mess that led to. I mean, what are these people thinking? This is an absurd, from their point of view, it may not be absurd, but from the American people's point of view, a totally absurd act of militarism, act of imperialism, and this idea that this is humanitarian, falls the moment you have any knowledge of the long sweep of American foreign policy. It's got nothing to do with humanitarianism. I thought the best answer to this was Jacob Sullums, the syndicated columnist and Reason editor, who said he quoted Obama saying, "We can't stand idly by while tyrants threaten their people." And he said, "Yes, we can, and we do all the time." And I would add to that, and I'm using we and us, of course, metaphorically, I mean the power elite, some of our best friends are tyrants who constantly threaten their own people, some in the coalition as well, especially the Arab League. So what the heck are they talking about that we can't stand on idly by? I mean, it's just dishonest, and they think the American people are morons, because it's the only way you can explain the statements that they make publicly. You have to understand that they assume we're morons. Then you can see why they say that. Otherwise, if you have the mistaken premise that they think we're intelligent human beings, you say to yourself, how can they say that? But just change your premise. They think we're morons. Now it makes total sense that they would say that. They think we're blithering idiots.
Well, now the question is whether they're morons, because, Robert Gates said, as you note in your article, that, hey, look, there ain't no such thing as just a no-fly zone. This is going to be, a major thing. We're going to have to bomb all kinds of things, and then we're going to have the repercussions of that and this and that. And so You know, it's pretty hard to believe that they just didn't hear him. Of course, he clicked his heels and saluted and ordered the troops in rather than resign and protest or anything like that. It's not like he's that against it, even though he just said 2 weeks ago that you'd have to be crazy that any Secretary of Defense who told his president to go ahead and put troops in Africa or Asia or the Middle East ought to have his head examined. And yet, here he is. He's led us into this war, and I'm thinking, so does that mean then if they assume that we're idiots, can we safely assume that they're smart and that they mean to have a full-scale, at some point, invasion and occupation and Iraqization of the state of Libya, Sheldon, you think?
I think they know what they're doing. They're pursuing the policy elite, the ruling elite's interests. They need to do this. It's an oil-rich country. It's in the hands of an unreliable ally, as you've pointed out many days now in your program, ally, for, at least for the last 5 or 6 years. Thanks to George W. Bush. But he's erratic, and the Arab leaders never liked him. He insults them. And so he's not reliable, and with things breaking down there, the U.S. Elite felt they had to act to protect their own interests. However, the reason they make the stupid statements they're making is they realize the American people are suffering war fatigue. They wouldn't go for an honest description of what we're up to, and so they had to put it in this very modest-sounding terms, which, of course, you know, doesn't make they don't make sense once you start to examine them. But, you know, Gaddafi has to go, but we're only setting up a no-fly zone, and regime change is not the objective. You can't put those statements together. But again, they think the American people are morons and will just say, oh, okay, we're not going to a brand new war. It's just this modest thing. We're not trying to, you know, they think that then we'll change the channel and go over to the basketball games.
Right. But they can't back down now. I mean, they leave him in power, then he goes and kills those same rebels that they're calling civilians that they have to protect. They have to get a regime change at this point.
But they assume the American people aren't going to, and unfortunately maybe a lot of the American people won't do this, but they won't trace it out logically and say, hang on, that makes no sense whatsoever. And first of all, why is the media, I was going to say why, we know the answer. The media, which are really just stenographers, keep calling this a no-fly zone, and yet it was clear from day one it was more than a no-fly zone. A no-fly zone means at most you hit air defenses, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that you can fly and command the skies and not let the other, the home team fly. That's a no-fly zone. That's what that term means. But from the first day, they were doing more than that. They were hitting ground troops. They were hitting ammunition dumps. They were hitting his compound. Do tanks fly in Libya? Maybe they have some secrets we don't know.
Yeah, they were blasting infantry. They turned it into no-walk zone.
Well, I guess they fly. I guess they're like the monkeys in The Wizard of Oz. And so it's a serious no-fly zone. Nothing's allowed to fly, even if it's physically incapable of flying. So it was never a no-fly zone, and yet the papers still call it a no-fly zone. This is what happens when you don't want to tell the truth. You have to say really, really stupid things and pray that people won't apply some logic to it to see that they're being totally gulled.
Well, and it's Hillary Clinton up there in the State Department. Of course, I'm sure she probably just told Obama, look, we'll sell this like a Clinton-style Democrat war, a no-fly zone, a limited number of airstrikes, the kind of wars that Americans were going to really like in the 1990s, where none of our guys get killed, and they don't show us any footage of the children and women and elderly people killed on the other side. And you know, like Clinton's war in Kosovo in 99, like Homer Simpson said, you know, war these days is just like turning on a light and claps his hands. You know?
well, that's right. And of course, you know, any civilian casualties which are alleged by Gaddafi's government can easily be parried by saying the press will say we can't confirm that, and who would believe him anyway? And so they're immune. They're immune from the objections.
And, you know, Sheldon, you talk about them playing us like we're stupid. I think we, being the American people, just might be. I mean, here America supports every dictatorship in the region. Hillary Clinton says that Hosni Mubarak and his wife are considered close personal friends of her and Bill. And we support the Saudis invading Bahrain to help put down the rebellion there. At the same time, we have them voting to support our action, invasion, bombing in Libya. And then today in Israel, Bob Gates says, oh yeah, you know, these revolutionaries in Syria, they really got right on their side. Their military should stand back and let them overthrow Assad. As though we can't tell the agenda here. You know, where Gaddafi, as you said, yeah, he was like kind of brought in from the cold, but they never really liked him. Not anything like they love the kings Abdullah in Jordan and Saudi Arabia, and Saleh in Yemen, who they've attempted to prevent from being overthrown for the last couple of months, to apparently no avail, as he's about to see the exit door, it looks like. But, you know, talk about stupid. We're on the side of the Libyan revolutionaries when America supports every... America is the cause of Islamo-fascism in the Middle East, you know?
Well, and Saleh, you know, Saleh may be on the way out because he may be the man who knows too much. I saw a quote from him in the New York Times that says he's saying to the president of the United States, saying to Obama, are you the president of the United States or are you the president of the world? Now, when you start asking questions like that in public, I think your days are numbered.
Who was it that asked him that?
Saleh.
Oh, really?
President Saleh in Yemen. But, of course, we'll need a strong man in Yemen. Again, when I say we, you know what I mean. I don't mean you, you and
the
me.
The empire.
Yeah, the empire will need a Darth Vader will need a strong man in Yemen because, you know, they got to get that Awlaki guy, that sheikh who, you know, that American citizen who they want to be free to murder. And you can't murder him if you don't know where he is. So we got to have a cooperative guy running things. And that means Yemen's going to need a new dictator. So maybe, I don't know if Suleiman from Egypt is available, but they need somebody like that over there. I'm sure they're hunting around for him, and they probably already have him in mind.
The battle to keep him available still rages in Egypt. You know, those people still have an uphill battle for sure.
That's true. That's true. In Egypt, of course, a whole other story. We can talk about that another time. I wanted to mention quickly NATO. The latest game they're playing is that the U.S. is backing out of this because we're turning it over to NATO. Although I heard today on Mrs. Greenspan.
Oh yeah, Andrea Mitchell Greenspan.
Yeah, the chief stenographer of the American Press Corps. That NATO was quite a little bit surprised by this, and are not sure they haven't agreed to take it over. But what does it really matter? The commander of NATO is an American admiral. NATO has always been an American tool, and so it's a charade anyway to say we're turning it over to NATO as if this is to tell the American people, look, it's really not our operation anymore. That was the whole point of that press conference last night that was being lapped up by Cenk Uygur and the MSNBC crowd. It's a joke. It's a joke. NATO is us, and we run NATO. And of course, the other enthusiast in NATO for this operation is Sarkozy, who's got his own political problems at home. And plus, they're afraid of Libyan refugees coming to France. I mean, they have he has a vested interest in all this. It's not humanitarian.
Yeah, well, all that propaganda, we'll see what happens when it comes time for the beachhead and the invasion to take Tripoli, which they're going to have to do, it looks like, unless somebody gets really lucky with a laser pointer down there.
Well, I don't see how you can have the objective that Obama has set, which is he's got to go, right? He's got to go, and not do that. And yet, I think they're afraid on the other side that the American people just have had a bit much of this. So they are in a bind. They've gotten themselves in a bind. The empire, the imperial overlords, I think, are probably, you know, pacing the floor saying, how are we going to finesse this? We're really walking a tightrope here. And so I don't know how they're going to, I don't know what they're going to do, but I don't, I agree with the people who say, well, now that we, the analysis is correct. Now that we, you know, have our money on the table, we certainly can't leave Gaddafi in power because that's thumbing our nose. We'll lose our credibility. They are in a bind now. They're going to have to see it through, but they're afraid that the American people are going to be totally disgusted by it. Let's hope they are disgusted by it.
Mm. Well, you know, I kind of think that really they've been planning this for a long time, looking for the excuse to pick, you know, if they can't make it Somalia, figure out another place where they can make their first big beachhead into Africa and prepare for the full-scale invasion of the whole continent.
Well, yeah. I mean, I heard you go through that the other day.
It's a new American century.
Yeah, and your other analysis, which I thought was persuasive, is that they wanted to make an example to show they really are on the side of the people, since they're backing all these dictators everywhere else. They wanted to pick one example and say, "See, we're with the people." And so they picked an easy one. But it's the point is, it's not easy because if the American people aren't up for a another invasion and the committing of troops, because do they even have troops? Are there any troops to spare?
Well, and the question is, though, too, is that, you know, at this point, does it matter at all what the American people want?
Well, I hope it does matter. They may think it doesn't matter. I hope it's just, you know, it's just one step too many, or it's the straw, and that something will happen. Now, you know, you could take the more pessimistic side and say, nah, as long as there's no draft, then the people aren't going to be aroused. And unfortunately, that may be true. I'm just hoping for the best, and that people, you know, enough people are going to say, this is nuts now. You know, we're trying to get out of two wars. We're told we're getting out of two, and now we're starting a new one.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, I think, I mean, I don't know. I was a kid in Operation Yellow Ribbon in 1991, so I wasn't really exposed to most of the debate, although I was trying to watch a lot of CNN and whatever at the time. And I remember it being explained to me then that since World War II, the United Nations Security Council holds the war power, and they can declare war. Congress doesn't have to declare war, even though it says that in the Constitution. And that was all I heard about. It was my own question about it. And it's short answer that was apparently commonly accepted. And I'm not sure if you could compare and contrast then and now, 1991, 1990, 1991, with today, but it seems like a lot of people are questioning the right of the UN Security Council to commit the United States to war, with or without the U.S. Congress involved.
Well, and there was a report just put out, or a quick analysis or something by the Congressional Research Service, that challenges this whole idea that just because the resolution's passed by the Security Council, we all have to hop to it. As he put it, and it seems, and it makes sense to me, this is a principle I've always heard, Congress cannot give away a power. It can't delegate a power. So
right.
It can't say to the UN, okay, from now on, you get to make declarations of war. We relinquish that. They're not allowed to relinquish the constitutional power. So
right, and, you know, the other Scott Horton, the international law expert, explained on the show, professor at Columbia explained on the show, that any treaty that changes an American law, that's binding. But a treaty cannot change the Constitution.
Yeah.
There's part of the Constitution that liberals always cite that says, well, the treaty is the supreme
right.
law of land. But it doesn't say it can rewrite the Constitution with a majority of just the Senate, a supermajority of just the Senate and the President in conspiracy together can change the entire Constitution. Yeah,
right. That's right. That's absolutely right. I have one modest suggestion. I want a constitutional amendment that says no war until we have a public referendum on the name of the operation.
Yeah.
Honesty Dawn is totally idiotic. Somebody said it's the name of a stripper.
Thanks, Sheldon. SheldonRichmond.com.
Thanks,
FFF.org.